Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. Man, what another day, what another day. What another day down here in Morgan, North Carolina, where we're having big fun. Having big fun all day. Got my little brother Curtis on the line with me. Got another brother on hold with me. We're going to be doing a little talking today. Want to talk about the children, talk about family, talk about how we can make this thing work. How, through it all. Through it all, as they say, we can make it happen. Through it all, a lot
Amen.
Going on in the world today. How you doing tonight, Curtis Gatewood? How you doing tonight, Curtis Gatewood?
Brother Leon Gatewood, how you doing, man? Those are my favorite subjects that you're referring to about making sure we protect our children.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that is a challenge today, you know?
Yes, sir.
It always has been, and it
right.
always will be. So we have
right.
to make sure we're doing all we can to, well, we're doing our part to make sure children are taken care of, getting their schooling, their learning, their manhood. You know, it's really
Amen.
Tough, man. It is really tough. But anyway,
Amen.
How you doing tonight, brother? How things going in
hey, man.
Burlington, North Carolina?
Hey, man, we're holding it down. A little under the weather. I have a cold here. We don't mm-hmm. believe it's COVID. Of course, I've gone through all the precautions that you must go through as a person who works out here. I've taken mm-hmm. all of the vaccinations and booster shots and avoided direct contact as much as I can. So, Whatever has happened, we believe that, you know, when you do what you can, God will help you with the rest. So
that's right.
But I'm a little under the weather. I think I have a little cold. It's probably the first one I've had in a while. So anytime somebody gets a cold, now everybody starts thinking right away, oh, that's COVID, you know.
Man,
as if we can't get a cold.
Talking about don't cough around me, bro.
Don't sneeze. Don't lose any weight or talk slow. Don't do anything. You better have your back straight, shoulders thrown back, and head high.
Exactly. So, you know how that is. So everybody's up.
You can go to sleep.
Any of that.
Yep.
Don't do any of that. Guys, look,
Before I get off, I do want to just comment on what you talked about there. And I might not be able to stay on too long tonight. But okay, I do want to
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and talk, but I'm going to take on hold for just a second. Somebody just walked into the center, but I will be right back shortly. So keep talking, guys. I'll be right back, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the Real Radio Show, the number to call is 215-383-3872. Tonight, our subject is How Are the Children? And we'll talk more about that in just a little bit. You listen to Robert Curtis and Leon at the moment. Curtis, go ahead, brother.
Thank you. Thank you, Leon, and thank you, Brother Robert. Assuming Joseph may be on the way, but in his absence, I do want to take this opportunity to thank everyone who would take the time to listen to the Gatewood Brothers as we discuss some critical issues. And I certainly take issue with how our children are being systematically pushed out of school, pushed out of all of the things that would normally make us our best, and that also calls for us as a community to step more into this picture, and we not be as reliant or dependent upon the system and or all of its so-called mechanisms that are supposed to make us better, but we have evidence to show that a strong community produces strong children. And unfortunately, over the past years, since the death of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., since 1968, the report would show that the Kerner Commission and other reports would show that there has been deterioration in some key areas, especially as it pertains to how many of us are now being arrested and how there has been a breakdown of the village in the black community. And I think I can say that I believe my brothers, myself, I think we are products of the village that took care of us. If mother or father couldn't be there for some reason, dad was out running revival, or mother had her hands full with trying to deal with 10 boys, 4 girls, whatever, there was a larger community of neighbors who would step in. Mm-hmm. And if they hear anything going on in the community that did not sound right, their first instinct was not to call the police, but to come out and help. And I think we've lost that. We have a big thing about how bad the police are treating us, and then we are the police, the first thing we call whenever we hear some young men outside having a discussion or an argument or music is loud or whatever, then we have people calling the police on them. And so we're going to have to decide. Yeah.
Robin Cutler. Let me ask you this. How your recommendation, how do we balance as a community, as parents, as neighbors, as people in the community in general, when you have now this, it's almost like a one-ton disregard for life and property in the community.
Right.
And then when you have some of these kids, like, I mean, they're just really out there. They're just going wild. And then you call the police on them, and the police end up shooting somebody. And then the community, of course, is up in arms over that. Some people are having a hard time reconciling the two.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that is why, you know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel all the time. We probably need to do more, become more students to our history and see what brought us this far. And I would have to say faith brought us this far is not really a cliche. It's actually the truth. We have people who actually believed that the church family, the church community, actually come together and help and assist in using their wisdom and using their parenting skills, using the various levels of expertise that you can find in a group, whether they be social social development skills, early childhood skills. There are various skills in, that will come into play when you bring people together. And what we have not done, we have not maximized the power and usage of a group that comes together almost every Sunday across this country, known as the church. And so I don't, so I think what we have experts in these areas that we often, you know, underestimate, underuse. We do not use our resources. And so the church, I think, is the greatest, I think the church is the epitome of not utilizing its resources right now. That's why I come pretty hard at the church right now. Sometimes people think I come a little bit too hard. But the fact of the matter is, you know, in the church you will find people who say they believe in God, they have faith. You have people who say they are good, they say they're Holy Ghost filled. You have people who say, you know, that they know about Jesus the Christ and all of his good works. So I would expect to whom much is given, much is required. And so I would think that with those types of resources, they have a larger obligation to step it up.
Well, I think that's a good answer, actually, because many people are scratching their heads. It's like, look, we can't call the police. If we call the police, we're going to be frowned upon as contributing to somebody getting shot.
Right.
And nobody wants that. But somebody's breaking in your house, you're going to call. You're going to try to get help any way you can.
Exactly. And Robert, there is, you know, we don't want to compare, you know, apples with the Appalachian Mountains. You know, there are times when you probably have to call the police or some type of law enforcement. So I'm not a person who says there's never a time when you have to, there's never a time that you would need to call the police. But I do say even the police, they're in such need of learning how to de-escalate rather than escalate. They're in so much of a need to learn the Constitution of the United States of America, basic amendments and rights that they violate on a continuous basis, until whenever we can avoid it, we certainly should. And so one way we can avoid it is by becoming more hands-on involved in our communities and not just see certain black youth as criminals or the enemy as depicted in the media, but actually get to know their families, get to know who they are.
Well, here's a off-the-cuff thought. Could the church play a intermediary role between the community and the police? Is that
a
vacuum that the church can fill?
Absolutely, Robert. And see, one of the things, too, just so you all would know, in case you had not heard, there's actually been a proposal that we are making through the organization that I am a part of, Justice Ministration. The acronym is Jesus Uniting Souls to Increase Community Engagement. We have our own religious outreach coordinator in the person of Julia Ross, who is an evangelist, a woman of God. And what we are trying to do is actually organize the religious community, the church, and serve as a resource whereby, since I have experience in organizing, as you know, I probably organized probably some of the largest events, marches, probably in North Carolina's history. But what I'm saying is if we could do that with churches, just on the faith community, and find out which churches are capable or willing to mentor, to actually take it out of the pulpit and mentor a number of youth that we find in trouble today. Because if you would take a youth that's about 8 years old, seven, nine, 10, who are still in their impressionable years, where they are willing to hear what is right, where they're being actually being, they're actually looking at models at this age. And if they could get real models in front of them that could actually serve in helping to mold them at that particular age, as Frederick Douglass put it, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. If we not wait until they're 16, 19, 20, 21, out here already have become a part of those caught in this cycle of crime and violence. We could cut this path off. We talk about the pipeline to prison, but I don't hear a lot of people talking about ways in which they're going to cut off this pipeline and make sure that we get to them before they get to the pipeline, because the pipeline to prison is actually more than a pipeline to prison. It's actually a pipeline to destruction, a pipeline to self-black hatred, a pipeline to violence, a pipeline to premature death.
So from what I'm gathering from you, and it's pretty clear that, just to make it plain, that you think the church has a much larger, well, it should play a much larger role in this, to fill some of these voids that we have in our community, some of these gaps, whether it's through mentoring, whether it's through police mediation, whether it's through pulling kids off the street. There's no shortage of needs, but I can't think of a larger resource in our community. It's like, if you're talking about, like, some communities, they specialize in nails. Some communities specialize in technology. Some communities specialize in gardening. We seem to specialize in churches. And if that's where all of our resources are going, those resources aren't being put to the best use.
Exactly. There's not a return on the resources.
Right.
Robert, you can go into any black community, anywhere in the United States of America, and you will see multiple churches on almost every corner. And in some of the most high crime, at-risk areas, you will see churches. And so, so a lot of times we are looking for answers around what God has made obvious in putting all of these churches and these resources there. But we are not holding them accountable. Now, some people feel like you're going too far when you actually try to hold a place that's described as a place of God, where you have an appointed leader or the angel of the house or the good shepherd there. And so a lot of black people, as a part of our religious and cultural beliefs, we are reluctant to question those entities. However, God also, he did give us common sense. And he also gave us people who, throughout our scripture, throughout our history, questioned these institutions, including the great Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who wrote a letter from the Birmingham jail saying to the churches, you have to step it up. You have to do more. And he would say, he would put it like this: it is one thing for the people who hate us, the racists, to do what they are doing, but the people who are supposed to be good, when you are silent, that is a silence of consent. And so Dr. King ran into this problem as well. So it's not new, and throughout the scriptures, you will find that many of the prophets had to ultimately deal with this issue, and we are at that point again.
Hey, Curtis, let's imagine this for a minute. I'm sitting here thinking about I know I study a lot of history, study a lot of war, study a lot of international organizations. And one thing that came to mind is when you think about like a terrorist cell, you know what they do? They have what we call a sleeper cell. They put people in the community to blend in. Let's imagine for a minute. Let's use our imagination for a minute. Let's say the church is that sleeper cell. We snuck in under the radar, and once we get in there, we're going to start educating people under the radar. We're going to start giving people financial literacy under the radar. We're going to start financing businesses under the radar. We're going to start bringing mentorship under the radar. So we have already placed the sleeper cells in place. All we have to do now, Curtis, wake them up. Wake them up. They're in place.
Robert, and you are saying exactly what happened in order for us to build the Black Wall Street, to build Livingstone College, to build many of the HBCUs that you see that have not been built over the last 70 years. That's exactly what they did. The church was there in place. And, it's kind of like you know, it's not one of those things that people look to be where they put their defense up if they see a Black Panther Party or Nation of Islam or certain group that specifically calls out the white man and the racist institution of white supremacy. You know, they have their guards up for those guys, and they're constantly working to try to make sure they neutralize. And J. Edgar Hoover made it very in 1956 when he came in with the COINTELPRO program, saying, we're going to kill these guys who are emerging as these black messiahs. We're going to kill them. We're going to neutralize them. So they had their guards up for those folks. But they can't shut down the whole church community. So the church was actually straight out of the plantation, building businesses, helping people to get homes, having serving as shelter for the homeless, where people, you know, had to leave the plantation, had nowhere to go. But there's
so
a church somewhere. Mm-hmm.
What you're basically saying is that this has been happening, this scenario I just painted has been happening all along. And
absolutely.
That somewhere along the way, the wheels have kind of sort of come off the wagon. It was in the
way. We lost our way. Yes, sir. We
lost your
way.
Exactly.
We started believing that, you know, faith is just a thing about voodoo. You know, that ain't a real to faith in God and all that stuff. So we were easily distracted into thinking that we had grown so intelligent or so thinking with so much logic now until to talk about God or somebody in the sky, somebody going to heaven and hell, all that's just crazy stuff. So that was how I think one way that the devil took that thing away from us. I think secondly, there's been a total breakdown of the village since so-called desegregation. When desegregation occurred, it caused us who were once forced to stay on the same side of the track, forced to stay in the same community, forced to patronize our own businesses. That did a lot when that barrier was basically lifted into so-called desegregation, which is selective integration, because it selects on what it wants from the black community. You know, they don't mind taking your dollars. They don't mind taking all that, but they're not going to integrate real power. They're not going to integrate, you know, real institutions and real top management positions. The integration is, of course, a part of a phony form of integration, tokenism. But so we failed for it, and we threw away the church. But the church is still in place for the most part if we would come to our right minds.
Well, I think another approach, another thing to look at also, Curtis, is that the church can help combat some of this negative, imagery that we see. Some of this negative music that our children are listening to. I heard a saying the other day, which I thought I was so profound, and it went like this, Curtis. It said, let me write the song for you, people. And if you allow me to write the song for you, people, it does not make any difference who writes the laws, because the songs would take care of it. Doesn't matter what the law says. If I can write the songs, I don't have to worry about writing the law.
God,
and
God,
so
Jesus,
I
and
think that the
wow.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Sir.
Once again, another place where the church. Go ahead.
We're not singing Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound to save the wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. You know, we're now actually rapping about gang wars. We are actually talking about popping a black man, that is referred to as the N-word in most of these songs. They're actually talking about how to hate women, how to hate men, and especially those who are considered to be in the so-called hood. So there is a deliberate a message in this music. And, you know, we can't attack any particular genre. I think that's been a mistake in the past. Somebody just jump out and say we don't like rap music anymore. When there's actually a lot of talented rappers out here who really can show their talent. And so if you just put a whole blanket on hip-hop, then it's going to cause some, outrage from a younger population. But I think
Curtis, it's just one more form of division. If you start isolating certain genres of music or certain ages of people or certain whatever, that's part of the plan. If we can keep them fighting among themselves, let them get the rappers fighting everybody else.
Yep. So if you come out talking about you hate rap,
your rap is going to hate you.
Yeah, exactly, because these young people love it. And so what we have to do is figure out how to meet people where they are, which is something Jesus Christ did all the time. That's why they accused him of being with the sinners. They're like, man, you went to sinners. You hanging out with the people that we are speaking against in the church. And Jesus was like, well, why should I be with the people who are supposedly whole? Why wouldn't I be with those who need a physician? Why would I be hanging with folks who are always saying they're saved? Why should I be with people who already say they're Holy Ghost filled and sanctified when I got people out here who are being destroyed, especially systemically, beyond their own power? So people are not thinking the way that Jesus thought.
I'm putting it in lay term. Why should I be preaching to the choir? The choir's already on board. You get out here in the streets.
Exactly. And they about to find out the choir's gone. They end up preaching to the preachers. They're preaching to the pulpit staff, you know.
Right.
Even the choir is gone somewhere. So, yeah, so that's absolutely the case. And I think I heard some person put it like this. It's like what the church is doing now is they get they stay so much inside of the church. It's like a fire department who has all this water and all these things that can put out fires. They got the big truck and everything. They're right there in the fire department, and they just stay in the fire department blowing their whistle while the houses are burning down around them. But they're standing there holding the water.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, Curtis. Now, some people are going to use this as a, let's say if you make this entry to this, I don't say assault, but let's say you make this plea to the church to kind of mend this ways and come out and start serving the community. Some would take that as a form of division because there are some very staunch, diehard people in the church who are very resistant to change. So how do we keep that from becoming another form of division?
Absolutely. And see, the thing about it is, Robert, there's not really a way to prevent division from people who are blind. We have to keep focused on those who want to see. Even Jesus would not spend a whole lot of time just preaching to the blind. He would say he would shake the dust from his feet, and he would move on. He would also say to people, oftentimes you have blind leaders of the blind. And he said, when the blind lead the blind, they both end up in the ditch. So all of our leaders have had to experience this, what you're referring to. And so there's no way to keep everybody happy. So what you have to do is stand. And when you stand for what is right, even if it leaves you with only two or three, Jesus already had a thing for that. Well, two or three gather in my name, there am I in the midst of them. So you can't please everybody. And so when you know that you know that you know you are right, then you take that out, that message out, as far as you can take it, to as many people as you can take it. And then once you've done all you can do, then you just let God do the rest.
Well, Leon, seeing as how all the children, sounds like you can't get to the children. You've got to go through the children, the adults, to the children. We just can't go out here pulling random kids off the street trying to make them straight when they got parents at home.
Right.
You're going to have the biggest fight of your life. So it sounds
absolutely.
Like this, we have to hate to use Ronald Reagan's term, but you got to do some trickle down. You got to get the parents straight and let them educate them. And if they're in the church, they have to go to their pastors. They have to go to the elders and say, look, we have a problem here.
Right.
My child is
right.
out here in these streets. What are you doing about it?
Yep. Because, see,
that's
the church, another thing, the church provides an infrastructure and that, oftentimes that even many, you have a lot of community organizations out here, but they don't have an infrastructure. They have good heart.
Infrastructure.
They really want to do good work. They get grant money and all that. But they really don't have a real board, a real committee, real people who actually listen to the leader, real people who already say that their mission is about righteousness and all that. So the church has that infrastructure that is missing from the new organization that are actually trying to replace the church.
Yeah. Brothers, listen to me a minute. How y'all doing, man? I'm really enjoying your conversation, really enjoying your discussion. I tell you, we're getting all kind of messages saying that we, Robert did a link, anyway, the Facebook link that we sent out is not working. So I'm asking people to call in. And that call in number is 215-383-3872. I don't know how they're going to hear it, but I'll put it on a chat box or something.
They can go to the website, Two Brothers For Real, and the link is right up there in the header. Click on that. It'll bring you right in.
Okay.
You might get, so you're saying the Facebook link isn't working. That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
All right. Somebody's got to
try
that.
Maybe they... Make sure that link is working, though, Robert. The one on Brothers For Real.
Let me check it.
Hold on
and a second. You can see somebody got their hand.
As I said, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Brother For Real radio show. The number to call is 215-383-3872. Curtis, what you were saying, and Robert, what you were saying about getting through the parents, going through the parents to get to the children, that's an interesting statement, especially in these times. I say that because so many children are on their own. And when I say that, I mean children really don't get their parents' permission to do a lot of the things they do now. Another issue is parents don't pay a lot of attention to what their children are putting into their heads. And I've said this maybe 100 times. When parents come to me, they'll say, "I don't know what's wrong with that boy." You know, they're having trouble with their boys and their girls. And they'll say, "I don't know what's wrong with them. They were not brought up that way."
Mm-hmm.
However,
mm-hmm.
they're not paying attention closely enough to what their children are putting into their heads. Because,
right.
You know, when we were growing up, mom and dad kind of listened to the same things we listened to.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
We only had one TV in the house and a radio. And it stayed on what mom and dad wanted it to be on. That makes sense.
Yeah.
However, now,
I want to say something to that.
Thanks to cell phones, YouTube, all of those amazing inventions of technology, young people have access to things that parents don't even know about. They hear stuff that parents couldn't even stomach. Their parents and grandparents couldn't even stomach if they heard it.
Yeah.
And that's what they've been. And that's why the parents are not recognizing the people in the house with them. They're like, I don't know this guy.
I wanted to say something to that.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I've done a little bit of everything as far as part of my work. And whether it's professionally or is in the community. And I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but for 10 years I worked as an early childhood development provider.
I remember that.
And one thing about that is what it would teach.
Was it Bright World or something?
Teaches us is that there is a window of time for each phase of life, of a child's life. There are opportunities for development in each phase. However, the parents' phase is early. In other words, if you're talking about the parent having a lot of influence on what a child thinks or does, it has to happen during those developmental stages. Because and everybody who has a child will know this, there's a certain period of time where that child wants to be with you all the time. If you leave, they cry. They want to make sure that you are around. They're wanting that attention from the parent. Then there is another phase of time where that person, that child, starts to get the influence from the peer, not the parent. So what the parent has to do is be cognizant of that time of child development while that child is listening. That is why the scripture is very important, to train the child up in the way they should go. And when they're old, they will not depart from it. The Bible is speaking from experience about how development works. So that, and that's also, that's the same thing, again, that Booker T. Washington, Frederick Douglass is saying, when he said, it's easy to build strong children than to repair broken men. When they get out of that window of listening to the parent, of wanting to be with the parent, wanting to hear from the parent, then the parent is late when you allow them to go through that whole period and do whatever they want to do, and then you wait until they get to the part or phase of life where they're more interested in impressing the peer rather than the parent, and you start trying to bring in your little ideas, it's not going to work. So we have to know where we are, what phase we're in, when we're talking about helping children. And that is why it's often a good time for parents to even get an understanding of this. We might have to have some open community dialogue about family, community, and child development openly, to help parents understand why they are catching the hell. They are waiting too late to try to get that child on board when they've allowed that child to pass through the time where that child is listening to the parent, love the parent, want to be with the parent, want to go everywhere with the parent. The parent can do wonders with that child, and a lot of times they lose that period, and then when they get to that peer pressure period, it's almost too late.
Amen to that. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brother For Real Radio Show. The number to call is 215-383-3872. We're going to take a quick break right quick. When we come back in, we're going to be speaking with Ms. Shannon Hope. Shanga Hope. She was the King Elite Stars, the competition cheering squad. And we're going to have her on the line. She's working with about 52 young people. She can give us some insight, perhaps, on how we can help our young people get stronger. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brother For Real Radio Show. The number to call is 215-383-3872. If you can't get us online, I don't know how you can hear me, but hey, call 215-383-3872. All right. Ladies and gentlemen,
Hey, Leon,
yes, sir.
I did drop the Brothers For Real link on the Brothers For Real Facebook page. Under the comment section, and anybody else can just go to the homepage of Brothers Real. That link does work.
Great, great. brotherforreal.com, right? www.brotherforreal.com. That's FORREAL.com. All right. Man, I said I felt like a real radio guy then. It felt good.
Ladies and gentlemen. That sounded pretty good, man. That was pretty good.
Yeah, thanks, man. I was feeling it for a minute, boy. Anyway, I was down here in Anson County, and a young lady reached out to me and say, Mr. Gatewood, can we, anyway, let me talk about the Holler Center. We try to call the Holler Center Black America. Anything you want to do here, you're welcome to do it as long as it's legal. That makes sense? You can come here, build your business, share your ideas. If you have a cheerleading squad, if they need somewhere to practice, we want to be that. We beg you to come down here and practice at this place. We want to be that. That's why we're here. That's what we need to do for each other. That's why we're here. Shannon, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And thank you for pulling our young people under your wing.
Oh,
making
I love
them,
it.
Teaching
I
them the
it.
Spirit of excellence.
Yeah,
we have
sure.
to find ways to teach our children the spirit of excellence. They need to know what they have in them and have somebody that, like Shannon, who can build it up.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Our children are our biggest investment, so that's something that's very important to me in the way that I was actually raised, because I'm originally from Anson, so being raised in that area, we didn't have much, but we had each other. And my grandma, she focused on education. She focused on just trying to make us see what was important outside of, you know, having money or the materialistic things that the kids are focused on now. So that's why I love having a program back home, because a lot of people ask me, why do you drive here? Why do you come back? Or why do you even still try when it's so hard to have something here? And I do it because it was a promise that I made to myself growing up. That's what I had when I was growing up.
I hear that same thing.
So you had that family, thing growing up, and you want to share it with young people may not.
Well,
a lot of your kids do, I guess, the young people you work with do, but some may not. And for those who do not, it's our obligation to share, our blessings. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And it gets
so tell
tough,
us about
you
King.
Know. Kingalee actually was Waysburg Trojans, and we took a year break, and then I changed the name to Kingalee. I have a son that's actually named King, and we've always been independent, but we've always received so much support from Holla. You've always just opened your door. We come in and we do whatever we want to do in the Holla Center. And, you know, one of the main reasons why I'm very comfortable in your center is because a lot of times when you're using someone's facility, you know, you come in and they, you know, you have to watch people around this stuff and make sure everything's okay. But you don't do that. You just open the floor and you just disappear. And I'm like, where's Leon? But you trust me and you trust my girls enough for us to come in. You don't charge us anything. You allow us to stay as long as we like. We always go home with a whole bunch of stuff. And I really, really like that. I really like the community feel, and I just really like how you support the organization and the young ladies.
Yeah, sure. And you know why I do it? It's because, I tell you what, one of the things when we first came here, you won't see any signs. You don't see any signs on the building. Do not touch this. No sagging pants, no guns, no cussing. And the thought behind that was, if you put that sign up out there, somebody's going to think you have that. You know, somebody's going to think you have cussing and carrying on in there. But if you don't have that sign up and you have a presentation and you have an example, it just doesn't happen. People, we don't have a sign on the door, but when guys start walking in that door, if they have pants hanging down, they'll pull them up. We don't need a sign. I hope they don't have a gun hiding somewhere, because they don't come in with it pointing. But it's just
right.
So when you ladies do, you know, I can just tell what the example you have. When your ladies show up, they come in, they speak, they clean up behind themselves. There's not a sign telling them to do it because they have an adult example. And
mm-hmm.
that makes the difference.
That's right. That is
they have
so true.
Adult examples. Right. You and Renee and Stacy, you ladies do an excellent job. Those young ladies,
Thank you so much.
Glad to be a part of it. Yes.
Thank you so much. We enjoy it. We really do. We enjoy everything that we do. Our organization is not just about going to competition and winning, because I actually took one of the biggest groups on their airplane ride to Vegas from Anson. And it's not about that. We are family. And you can tell the difference when you come around us. Like, I know every last one of my girls, you know, and I know their parents, and they trust me with their kids, and that's what it's about. I'm the old.
How many do you have? You say you know every last one of them. How many do you have so people will know?
Well, throughout the entire program, girls are aging out. So right now, girls that are actually committed and stuck with the program, we're about 34. We were at about 50, I think about 58 in the beginning. But with COVID, it's been hard. But still, we're big and we're going and we have parent support. So if you invite us somewhere, we're coming deep. It's going to be about 50 of us when we get there. So we got to have 50 sandwiches.
Got to have at least 50
yeah,
sandwiches.
Yeah,
I'll be calling you talking about come on.
Yeah, we need 50 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches when we come to perform wherever it is. So you have to feed us, and that's about it. But we don't, you know, go around taking up donations. We don't do any of that. You know, we like I said, we're a family. Every last one of my girls' parents, even throughout the years, they'll tell you that they know me and they trust us and Stacy and Renee, and we love what we do. And that's what the community is missing. The community is missing the parent that sees somebody's child doing something wrong and actually saying, wait a minute, you know you're not supposed to be doing that. Come on now. We just walk around like
that's
kind of
risky, though. Let's keep it real a minute. That's kind of risky these days, isn't it? It's not like it used to be.
Yeah. It's not.
Because I know when we were growing up, Reverend Ellaby, down the street could slap us upside the head and, you know, it would be all right.
Right.
It's nice if you ever had to beat your boy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But now?
Yeah, you have to be careful.
A little risky. Gotta be careful.
Yeah, well, that's one reason why I'm independent. So if you bring your child to my program, I don't have like a big rule book I have to follow, but I ask that you trust me and trust me with your child and you kind of stand back. You have to be a coachable child, you know, to be a coachable adult. So that's one of our mottos.
There is a difference too. If you're asking somebody to just not do a certain bad thing, rather than trying to discipline that child, there is a difference. And so I think what you are saying and what I see happening is we are to the point now where we're either afraid or don't care to the point where we won't even say anything to the child.
Right.
You know, we just ignore whatever misbehavior that may be going on unless they resort to calling the police or something like that. I don't think that interaction exists in the community as it did.
Right.
That's true. So Shannon, what do you guys have coming up this weekend?
Yeah, we have a big competition in Raleigh, North Carolina. Actually, it's on the other side of Raleigh, Roseville, North Carolina. We will be competing. That's January the 22nd. We have three different levels, level 2, 3, and level 4. Level 3 and 4 will be competing in this competition. We started about 3 o'clock, and then our oldest level, which is level 4, they go on about 5:30, 6 o'clock. So we'll be traveling up there with probably about 16 of us, and then people from Anthem will come up if the weather will allow, but we are going to compete even if the weather is not that great. We still have competition. So that's what we'll be doing this weekend.
How have you been doing in competition?
We've been doing really, really good. So we had a level 5 team at our last competition. We placed third at our last competition. We've been known as the best, having the best jumps in competition, all around best team. So, you know, we've had a really, really good journey these past eight/9 years since we've been with this organization, which is, it goes by the name of Champion in Motion. is the name of the organization. So we've done really, really well. The girls train really hard. Most of them double cheer, so some cheer at the high school, and they actually cheer for me. So we train really hard. I try to prepare them for college cheer, whether it is a HBCU or, you know, any other school. I just want them to be equipped and have the basic tools they need to give them the opportunity to step in and be able to try out with girls that have been in All-Star Gym since they were 4 years old. So we try to keep everything on the same level just to give them the same opportunities.
Well, I was very impressed with the rehearsal. You know, the brief moment I did peek in and did notice the camaraderie again with the ladies and how to get along well, and I just like it. I really like it.
Thank you so much.
That's very important for our young girls these days. You know, young girls are having a hard time just like young boys now.
Yes,
you know, as far as discipline issues and stuff like that. So it's very important that your organization is successful, and you can always depend on us to make sure we do the best. We will do all we can to make sure, you know, what we can do. So give a big shout out to the Holla organization. This is not a Leon Gatewood thing. It's a Holla thing. So we really appreciate what you do. And like I said, we're here.
All right. Thank you. Thank you guys so much. And thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. You guys got any questions for Shannon before she pull out? She's getting out of here, man. She's got to get on the plane. Get out of here.
Yeah. I just want to commend her, Leon. And I think it also, again, it goes back to, I'm going to say the church again. I think churches should recognize or seek to identify organizations where you have young leaders or other, whatever type of leaders, that are actually putting together programs that are actually effective. And the church should be willing to have as a part of their budget, a budget space for youth development. And it doesn't mean that that church has to do it themselves. They don't have to reinvent a child development program or youth program in the church. They could actually go out and identify a sister like Shannon. Is it Shannon? Shannon?
Yes, it's Shannon.
And I think
Shannon,
right? Yeah. They could actually identify people who are actually doing that type of work and be willing to fund, have as a part of their budget, you know, those types of trips that she has to take, or making sure they don't have to spend any money when it comes to materials or anything when they're trying to carry out these types of effective programs. Because a lot of times we have people such as Shannon with good ideas and vision, but if there's not a form of support that's there sustain or help them to sustain, those great ideas can fall by the wayside. And we see it happening all the time. But those institutions such as the church, who would actually have a continuous flow of resources to start identifying groups that they can support to help to work in conjunction with these leaders.
I'm going to say this right quick. Shannon does something.
Great idea.
You're exactly right, Curtis. And here's what I've realized in African-American organizations. What the successful ones or the sustaining ones, you realize the people don't get paid. It's like a sacrifice those in the leadership positions make to make sure those organizations are sustainable, because once you start getting paid, I mean, it's a problem. Some stuff going to start up. It's just not going to work out. So, Shannon, congratulations to you on that behalf. I guess you wonder how I know that. But anyway, congratulations to you on that as well, that you're sacrificing your time for this.
I have Stacey Huntley and Renee Sturdivant, so we're all in the same boat.
Absolutely.
So we're a team. So it's actually three of us.
Absolutely, that's what I like to hear. Because it's the same here at the Holla Center. Nobody really gets paid. So it's like you have to, if you want to be sustained, if you want to sustain your organization. And I tell people this: you got to be born again. You got to believe in what you're doing, and you can't do it for the money. You got to love
that's
what you
true.
Do.
I love what I do.
All right.
That is so true. All right. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for being here. God bless you. All right.
All right.
Good luck on your competition. Absolutely. Robert.
Yes, sir.
How you doing, man?
Man, you know,
tell us what's going on in your life, man. How you doing? How you doing, man? I know you got a good story to tell. Man. What you... I know you. How you doing, man? up there in D.C.
Let me tell you, Leon, I was so into this conversation with Curtis and then Shannon. And Curtis said something toward the end that was really bears repeating, and that is many organizations, churches included, they feel like if they don't have the personnel or the expertise to do it, then it can't be done, or it's somebody else's job or responsibility. But what they have, as Curtis has also stated, they have infrastructure, they have resources. They need to partner with people that can get down and that are already on the street, that already have the connection.
Right.
Fund those people.
Absolutely.
Take some of those resources, take that infrastructure, that organization, and partner with those organizations that need those resources. And until we can do that, see, the big companies do this all the time.
Yep.
They get big and how they stay big. They partner.
Yep.
They don't have this. I'm not going to do this because you might get something I don't have. Or we got to check that. We have to partner with people like Shannon, organizations that already have the boots on the ground. They need funding and resources. And the church has a lot of it. They don't have as much as they used to, but they still have a lot.
Robert, see, I'm speaking from experience because I know how important it is sometimes just to have somebody who would copy flyers or do things that these institutions will have a copy sitting in it. You know they have a copy because they're going to do church programs and everything else. I mean, but they just having somebody that will help you with material sometimes would be so big to someone out here struggling trying to help children, trying to help people, and not even getting into the bodies they have. That is certainly worth mentioning. I want to say the same thing when it comes to civil rights. You know, a lot of times the pastor may not necessarily have to be the expert on civil rights, these voting matters, these discussions about the General Assembly and the legislature, all these things, but they might identify a person out in the community who's doing it, who already has it in their DNA. They could take that person and say, look, we want you to come in maybe the third Sunday or the fourth Sunday or 5 minutes before we start, and we want you to be our community person who will give us an update on what is going on in the community. And we'll provide, you know, you a little something for your travels or whatever, whenever you need to do this. If we would just do those types of things that are simple, but we'll let the knowledge go. We feel like if the pastor doesn't know it all, or the certain people who are the families that are controlling the church, if they don't know, it shouldn't be done. And we're going to have to stop that.
Can I give you an example? Can I give you guys an example of who does exactly what you guys are talking about? Black Voters Matter. Black Voters Matter. These guys.
You're right, Leon. You're exactly right.
Black Voters Matter. These guys, they just got it. They just know what to do. Anyway, they have what they call a capacity building grant. I mean, they see small organizations like Holler, and they'll say, oh, these guys out here running around, man, like chickens with their heads cut off. Let's give them some more. They said, let's give them some gas. Keep them running. So they give the Holler Center money. They give us money to operate, help us operate. And that's exactly what you guys are talking about. Some people get it. They understand the importance of and the value of grassroots organizations, and they feed into them. And that's what it's going to have to take for us, we as a people, to make happen, to make our things we do successful, because we have to support each other. Now,
exactly.
Just use an example.
Leon, I'm going to hit back at the faith community, because what I want to do is, when you made that point about Black Voters Matter, there's not a Black Voters Matter on every corner, you see. And a lot of people don't even know what Black Voters Matter is. And they are great at doing what you're saying do. But they do know that there is a church on every corner. Imagine if a good percentage, I'm not even talking about all the churches. I'm talking about if we increase the participation if it's at 10%, we increase it to 40% or 50%. If we could do that, imagine what the church could do in duplicating what Black Voters Matter and other people who are already doing, including the churches that are, because there are some churches that are doing this as well.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Well,
good point.
Good point. Good point. His church. Well, good point. Good point.
And Leon, to answer your question earlier, I do have a story. We just kind of have a time to hear my long story today, but at some point in the future, I'll be glad to share my journey with the audience. I just won't have time today.
Man, we'd love to hear that journey because you have a journey, brother. I have peeked into your journey, and it's amazing. I have seen the trailer to your journey.
Well, and you're part of it. You're part of it.
And I want to see the whole movie. It made me want to see the whole movie. That trailer is something else, bro.
Hey, man, speaking of movie, at some point, I think we need to allocate time to talk about the Emmett Till series and the documentary that follows each series, because that thing is really touching the consciousness of people that I think we might be underestimating. In fact, I thought I knew the whole story, and I found out, wow, there's just so many major pieces of this story. It's a horror story. It's a family story. It's a civil rights story. It's every kind of story that America needs to hear right now. It's a story about constitutionality, due process, all the things that we are losing right now. And so I don't know who thought about bringing this out right now, but I really think time where black folk are forgetting about what due process should be about the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, 14th Amendment, and all these other things that people died to make sure that people couldn't just say stuff or just take action, take it upon themselves to punish people. I think this documentary right now has a lot of people thinking. And there's some major pieces in there that I didn't even know about, like his father and so on and so forth. So at some point, hopefully, we can talk about this documentary.
Curtis,
hey,
here's what I want you to do, man. I was just going to say quick, since Curtis is talking about Emmett Till, I just haven't had the nerve to watch it, man.
I can't find the nerve, man.
You know, cause like you're saying though, I think I know it. I know, but I know the meat of it.
Right.
And the meat of it is so nasty that
it's so
I haven't found the guts to watch it.
And I was feeling the same way. I said, "This is for people who need to be conscious. I'm conscious already. This is for people who need to be conscious. But I'm finding out it might take the conscious people to help people to understand what they are seeing." And how we can take this and get the narrative right. Because what has happened over history is a lot of times things happen, but we lost the narrative. And the narrative went to those in power who do not like us. And so they rewrote the narrative to all this stuff. So I think we have an obligation to help to explain what we are seeing and how we can prevent these types of things from happening in the future.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I don't want to go off script here, but I got to bring this up. Did anybody see the video of the pastor spitting in his hand and rubbing in this guy's eyes? Anybody else see that besides me?
I didn't.
No, I didn't see that, man. I ain't sure I want to see that either.
Well, this pastor rubbing tar to somebody. He was supposed to be making a point about how sometimes religion or Jesus moving can get nasty. He did a hot spit in his hand and had somebody up on the stage and rub his spit on the guy's face and to make his point. And I was saying to myself, I don't get it. Am I missing something here?
He should be
missing
Chris. He should be in Chris.
Him.
He has a that is insanity. There's no point
him.
In the Bible you have to teach by doing that. And I'm pretty good scholar now.
I'd have kicked him where it hurts.
The Bible.
He said it was something in the Bible about Jesus spitting on somebody. I didn't get that part.
Yeah, but he's not Jesus. That's what he needs to understand. He's not Jesus. Because Jesus did a lot of things. Let me see him go out there and walk on some water. Let me see him turn some water into wine. He's not Jesus.
So you do
so
that.
That's
do
the
that.
First point.
There you go, Curtis. Tell him do that. You want to do something Jesus
did,
do
that.
That.
You want to show me you want to do what Jesus did. Go walk out there in the ocean.
As soon as you walk across
you
that corn,
spit on my
you can rub all the spit you want to.
Yeah.
Give it a couple of loaves of bread and some fish and make, feed a bunch of people.
Yeah,
do that.
And feed 5,000. Do that first before we get to the cock and spit. If you do that, maybe we can talk about the spit.
Turn my glass of water to some wine. Do that.
It ain't going to be the first thing on the agenda.
Yeah, man. That's fact,
right?
Hey, man, we got
the
baby brother on the line, man. You know what I'm saying? We got the baby brother on the line. Let's holler at it.
Hey, dang. Hey, bro.
y'all not spitting on folks over there at New Hope, are you?
No, man. I don't think we're not that deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not good.
That's
that.
He had to spit on the ground and made a little mud pie, I think, what he did.
Yeah, sure did. If you want to get technical about it.
He didn't put a chaser on it, didn't mix it with some Coca-Cola or water. Nah, no chaser.
You need to be arrested for assault to the fullest extent of the law.
I almost threw up in my mouth, man. I was like, God almighty. Is this where we are in the church? Oh, my God. But
that's,
he didn't apologize. Anyway, how you doing, Dan?
I'm doing good, bro.
He didn't apologize.
Crazy.
Good, man. That's
insane.
Anyway, guys.
That's what that is.
I just had to bring that up because we were talking about the church, and I said, "Did I miss a memo somewhere? I just want to make sure I'm on top of things. If we're spitting in people's eyes these days, somebody need to let me know."
He missed the memo that should come from the judicial system, which tells him that he needs to. They have a warrant for his arrest for spitting and abusing his parishioners. So. That's where you need to get a memo for. That is ridiculous. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's it. I'm done.
All right. Y'all having too much fun with that, man.
That's the memo he missed.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I don't want
to
see it.
Anyway, guys, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. We'll be back next Wednesday live, all the way live, when we're going to hear Robert's. We're going to peep into Robert's life, see what went on. See how he got
deep,
here,
man.
2022. That's deep, man. We want to hear what you got, man.
Wow.
If you leave anything out, remember I was there.
Wow.
Hey, man, you got a song right here. You need to put something up.
That's sad, boy. You guys all right, man. Love you, brothers. Y'all be good,
right,
man.
Daniel,
have yourselves a good night. Stay out of trouble. Stay out of COVID.
Everybody.
Curtis, let me say this, man. We really appreciate you hanging in there tonight, man. I know when we first pulled you in, you were like, man, I don't think I'm going to make it. God bless you,
man,
for hanging in there with us tonight, man. You had a lot to say.
Appreciate y'all,
good
man.
Stuff.
Y'all give me
good
a
stuff, bro. Thank you for all the people listening in tonight. Thank you, guys. Thank you for listening. We have some regular listeners. We appreciate you. We thank you. God bless you. Keep us going live, man. And they'll tell us in a minute. We don't listen to your reruns. You got to go live if you want us to listen. Tell me that all the time. Cold-blooded audience. All right.
Oh, James.
Big on the same. something.